You're listening to Majority Thursday on 670 KBOI. We talk to Republicans about the latest news in the Idaho legislature. Now here are Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
Paul, Jay still on vacation. David Allen here. Chris Walton with me in the next title studio. Representative Scott Sein from District 11 and Senator Stephen Thane from District 8. The Republicans are in the House. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
You got to love the weather, right?
Oh, I like it. It's spring weather.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. All right. We were talking before the show started, and I'm going to start out with this one. The gap in the health care bill is coming up today. Senator Thane, where do we stand?
Right now, the last I heard, the House is working on a proposal, but I was told last night that they're not going to print it. So there's one in the Senate that Senator Hagedorn and I have been working on. It's in the 14th order, which means the amending order. And we're going to amend it. There's going to be a little bit of drama. You like drama, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Democrats are going to propose an alternative amendment, which is to expand Medicaid, which I think we'll probably not get too far. And then we'll amend the bill to add a couple of things about providing primary care to those in the Medicaid gap. And then we'll move ahead.
Now, what will the difference be between just expanding Medicaid and then providing the primary care?
The main difference is we're focusing on primary care. And the Medicaid is a health insurance policy funded by the federal government. And so it covers everything from primary care through, you know, hospitalizations.
Generally for those who are somewhat destitute.
Yeah. Well, in Idaho, adults have a hard time getting on Medicaid. So that's where part of the gap is because the Affordable Care Act, if you didn't earn over 100% of the federal poverty limits, you couldn't qualify for subsidy. In Idaho, adults have had trouble getting on Medicaid unless they're disabled or mothers or something. One of the main issues we're dealing with in the United States is we think that health insurance equates to health care. And that's not the case. I believe you have to focus on primary care, build that foundation, and then deal with some of the downstream, you know, specialty and hospital issues later. But we need to build that foundation of primary care. And that's what this proposal does. It focuses on some of those people in the gap with chronic health conditions.
And people can go and have a physical every year, and they can have their checkups about their conditions, but it won't necessarily pay for everything for everyone.
No, but in visiting with one of my direct primary care docs, she indicated that she can take care of asthma, diabetes, hypertension, you know, several of these major issues on the primary care side for less than $1,000 a year.
Yeah. Some of those things I think we just think of, you'd have to go to a specialist, but maybe not.
Maybe not. What's interesting, I went up to Coeur d'Alene here a couple of weeks ago, and they have an interesting program up there, but the Dr. Abate pointed out that 23% of all medical spending is related to diabetes. Of course, that's according to the American Diabetes Association.
Yeah.
But still, if that's the case, it's scary, but an opportunity.
You guys have had a busy week, mandatory minimum drug sentences. I know a lot of people were up there. They're defense attorneys, family members, prosecutors, legal experts. Where do we sit on mandatory minimum drug sentences?
Yeah, I'm not totally versed on that.
Okay.
I don't think that's been on the up for a vote yet on the House side.
Okay.
And I'm not sure where the bill is either. I think it's maybe coming out of committee. So we haven't had a floor debate, and I don't sit on any of those committees either.
Okay.
Would you be generally for that or against the mandatory minimum sentences?
You know, I think there's problems with mandatory minimums. So I'd be very open to see what the legislation says.
Because we've had them for now about 25 years. And people have complained because they say, well, there were special circumstances about this and about this and about this. I imagine every case is different, but you kind of have broken the law at some point, I suppose.
Yeah, the penal system in the United States, I think, is changing. At one time, it was more about punishing people.
Yeah.
It should be trying to build them up, holding them accountable, but giving them some skills so they can return to
some rehabilitation. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's difficult, too. It's a difficult issue. But
all right. It's a Majority Thursday. Representative Simon, Senator Thain are with us this morning. It's 844. One final look at traffic this morning.
You're listening to Majority Thursday on 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show. Representative Scott Sein, Senator Stephen Thain with us. Let's talk a little transportation here. I know that obviously in the budget all the time, there's always talk about roads and bridges and all that stuff. Where does everybody knows that bridges and roads have to be repaired. Where do we stand with that process of getting it in the budget, keeping it in the budget? How much money and how's it all going to be allocated?
Well, there's a very comprehensive bill that Senator Brackett has brought forward. And actually for my district out in Canyon County, this is the number one issue is this fixing I-84. There's also Highway 55, there's State Street, there's 2026. And so, yeah, we need to focus on this. This bill that Brackett has brought forward, and I have to give him huge kudos because he has, from being from the southern part of the state, he's really taken this on and been the leader on that issue. So I'm actually excited. It's multifaceted, does some great things, and hopefully we can get something done this year.
We talk a lot on different issues about religious freedom. And, you know, if you have a business, you have certain things you're supposed to do. And if in private, there are certain things that you can do. But we essentially have freedom of religion in this country. And part of that is faith healing, that there are people who simply believe that with prayer and other methods, they can heal their own children and have the right to do so. But there are a couple of issues that are going through the legislature right now. Tell us about those, if you would.
Well, Senator Dan Johnson has been working on this issue, and I think he's got two bills. Neither one of them to remove the faith exemption, which I don't think the legislature is interested in doing. The impact, as far as the number of people, is fairly small, and we're hesitant to get into something that looked like regulating religion. So,
right.
So there's an issue there. One of them, I believe, states, and I haven't read them recently, so that if medical professional says a child is going to die, that actually that was actually an idea from someone else.
Right.
So I'm not sure this is in the bill or not, but the suggestion was that if a medical professional said, you know, death is imminent, that they could take them away and provide some medical treatment. But
right.
I probably think nothing's going to happen this year. It's really late in the session. We might only have 1 week left. And there certainly isn't unanimity of opinion on what should be done or if there's really a serious problem.
You know, you say there's 1 week left, and I know everyone's looking to finish next Friday. And now that we're close to that, is there anything that you guys have thought when you started the session that you think, boy, I wish we could have tackled this. I wish this would have come up more. I wish a bill would have been sponsored, or I wish somebody would have helped me push this through as we get close to the end here.
Actually, for me, Dave, it's been a really good session. Every bill that I've been working on is either over on the House side. In fact, Representative Syme carried one of those bills and it's passed through the House or is on third reading today. The last one is the Medicaid gap bill. Hopefully we have time to have a good discussion on that one and get it through. Other than that, personally, it's pretty good. Sessions treated me really well. I think if we go to the transportation bill, I'd like to say a little bit about that. We do have a bill going through the process. I think it's passed, actually, that added $52 million for emergency repairs to the roads. That leverages some federal money. So we're talking about, I think, around $170 to $200 million that can be used on some of the infrastructure needs that was damaged this spring with the flooding. Then the issue on Representative or Senator Brackett's bill, there's $300 million in there of new Garvey spending. That's probably going to get some headwinds. I think people are saying we probably should raise the gas tax if we really want to spend it rather than let taxpayers later down the road pay for it. So there's going to be some of those debates on, I think one of the aspects of that bill is to use some sales tax to pay for those. That might that might be a very interesting discussion because that's more pay as you go.
Mm-hmm.
Garvey, you're taking federal money that's supposed to go to roads in the future and paying it to pay off what we did in the past. So it'll be an interesting discussion the last week or two.
And there always seems to be an element of risk in Garvey.
You know, maybe
they'll change their minds. I don't know.
I think the Garvey issue is forefront primarily mm-hmm. because we have to have something done now. I mean, that section of I-84, somebody's going to be killed right there in Nampa sooner or later. And so it's a major safety concern. It's the number one priority for ITD. And I think that's probably why the Garvey funds have surfaced to the top, because it's the most immediate and the quickest way to get this done.
You're both involved in education committees, and there have been headlines the last couple of days, mostly people arguing and I think being taken out of context, that sort of thing, about education. But there's also a task force out there now trying to figure out what are Idaho's goals in the next few years in education. What do you guys think they should be, and what have you heard?
Well, probably the foremost goal, and I'm new, so I'm just learning. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to develop relationships with everyone. But the foremost goal is to make sure teachers are paid what they deserve to be paid. And in that, the career ladder that was developed, we don't want teachers to think that they're not valued either because of some of the guidance that was put in there on how they're evaluated to get the pay raises.
Goals? Well, obviously the goal is student performance, student achievement.
Yeah.
We're actually making, I think, some pretty good progress. For example, one of the programs the legislature sponsored actually predates the governor's task force recommendations, so it is one of them, is the Advanced Opportunities Program. And we're visiting with people from West Ada the other day, and they said last year there were 18,000 dual credits earned by students in West Ada.
Pretty good.
This year, they're on track to earn 33,000.
Wow.
So the students are stepping up to, you know, give them the opportunity, step up front to take advantage of these opportunities. One of the weaknesses, however, though, I think is the early childhood education or first K through three.
Mm-hmm.
We're focusing on that. We'll see if we have some returns or not on some of the efforts we've made in the past. But I think that's one area that we need to put some focus on.
I can remember how long it took to add kindergarten to the things the state takes care of. But there are people who want pre-K as well. How early is too early for the state to be taking care of things?
Well, I've been an opponent of pre-K, mm-hmm. at least universal pre-K. I think there's times that it makes lots of sense. But the direction I think Idaho will eventually go is more the two-generation strategy, where you work with the parent and the child, and you let parents give them resources, let them make choices on what they think they need, and basically be a resource for parents rather than take that over.
Gentlemen, we have run out of time, but thank you for appearing with us this morning or being here on KBOY. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Syme, Senator Thane, Majority Thursday. Coming up next, we've got Ada County Commissioner Rick Visser. He will join us after the news at the top of the hour on 670 KBOI.
If you're talking about it,
they're getting nervous, and they should be nervous.
You know, I kind of disagree with what you're saying.
We're talking about it.
You know, I think it's kind of great that you guys have that duality.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
Paul J. continues his vacation. David Allen, Chris Walton here with you. Joining us in the next title studio, new Ada County Commissioner Rick Visser. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Just fine, David. Thank you for having me on this morning.
Sure. Let's find out a little bit about you. This is your first time here, so let's find out a little bit about your background.
It is my first time here. I've lived in Ada County for 40 years. Currently, four generations of my family live here, from my 2-year-old granddaughter, who is the highlight of my life, up through my 90-year-old grandmother. And shortly after moving here in 76 and doing some construction work, some other work, I went off to U of I Law School, picked up a law degree, came back, went into private practice briefly, then spent 16 years at the Supreme Court as a research attorney and law librarian. And I was an adjunct prof during the last 5 years of that, then went over to BSU, taught some more, and worked with the Idaho Innocence Project.
Mm-hmm. Greg Hampikian over there. Yeah.
Great guy. He was my boss. Yeah.
What made you actually decide to run for commissioner?
I've been alert to what's been going on in our community, city, county, for years, even our state. And the practice I've had is I've been in touch with my representatives. Mm-hmm. And I decided now's the time to run. I was actually asked when I was at the Supreme Court to run about 12 years ago for this District 2 position. And at that time, I said no. But I retired in 2013, thought some more about it, threw my hat in the ring. And I just thought I wanted to ensure a high quality of life for my elderly mother and my little granddaughter who's growing up here.
So now that you've been on the job for 2 months, you obviously know everything and can comment on everything. How's the first 2 months been?
How's it been? It's nonstop for somebody that's new. What was suggested to me is to start in December, basically working not on the clock. And I did that and came in several times a week to attend meetings, to be up to date on processes and so forth. That made the transition a lot easier. And I think I did hit the road running and rolling. Since I've been in there, two changes I've made in our development services is the processing of survey applications quicker and through a more flexible process. We had an obvious bottleneck there, and sometimes it was taking up to a month for a plan to be approved. Now we have it under a week. And we added one employee, we changed the responsibilities of another, and I hope to bring on some externs from BSU.
Quicker government. I'm not sure I trust you right now.
I think it's great to have somebody in there who has been researching for years and knows how to do it. So that's a good thing.
Thank you. You have my vote.
Nice.
I have your vote.
Let's get to some nuts and bolts stuff right now. The Boise River, obviously, you've been here for 40 years, so you know it was not a great winter. And so the Boise River's flowing hard and fast and high. Give us the latest on that.
Sure. This is definitely a record year. What a snowfall. I was down in Southern California the end of November, came home the 11th of December, and it had started on December 10th. We went about 2 months where there was snow in our yard and everybody else's yard and along the sidewalks, gutters, shoulders, even some roadways and some subdivisions. It's nice to see that we've got such a snowpack up there because we've had so many years with it down there. But having 60 to 100% above normal, in other words, 160 to 200% in that snowpack, we have to be aware of what's going on. Right now, the National Weather Service has issued a flood alert for our area until midnight tonight. And what people need to do is be watching the weather. If it warms up and we get these 65, 70-degree days and we don't drop down to freezing in the foothills or above, it's going to melt all day.
I know people probably realize it's dangerous to be in the river right
now. Absolutely.
But it's also dangerous to be near the river.
It is. And I don't know how long David and Chris have been here, but in the 40 years, I remember some pretty good flooding. And it's not every year, but I had friends that had places off of Shinden down along the river where Banbury is now. And they flooded, and it would be above the crawl space and into their living area. There was a place on Eagle Road dropping down off of Shinden just west of Eagle Road. You could see it any time you drove by, an old white home that flooded, and one year they put something around it. Now, people, we have been urging people to consider flood insurance. It takes 30 days before it'll be active, but we already put out this advice in late December, and we keep on doing it and doing it. So you need to be aware. We're also taking a very active role in getting sandbags out, providing them free. People just fill them themselves. And if you're down in that Boise River plain, you need to be watching what's going on.
And I know we probably won't need to worry about this, people floating the river until sometime this summer. But a good general rule is just wait till you guys say it's okay, right?
Absolutely. We own the facility out at Barber Park, and that's when the season kicks in. And when that kicks in, then it's a safe time to do it. Kayakers are out there, but they do so at their own risk. But our rescue department is heads up on that, and they could get snagged. You can take a walk on any bridge in town, Ann Morrison, Glenwood, and you'll see that the flow is fast.
Yeah.
Didn't they make a movie, Fast and Furious?
They might have.
Yes. There we go. I don't want to borrow on that
actually,
without...
they've made 8 or 9 of them by now, but yes.
That's right.
And sandbags are still available. You mentioned flooding.
If yes, sir. Yeah.
If people would like to get those. And you can still get them, I guess, at Expo Idaho Barber Park.
Right.
Like that.
And then we've also dispersed them through location, City Hall and Star, Eagle, Meridian, Garden City. Fire stations also have them. You can call your local government if you live in the city, do that, or check on our website. Kate McGuire has done a great job in keeping our website up to date and using the social media tools that we have to keep people informed.
Fantastic. When we come back, I want to talk about the election and also property tax reduction, which everybody loves to have. 914 now at 670 KBOI.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 3, listen to Nate on 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show. KBOI Rewards Code, sandbags. Go to KBOI.com, enter the keyword sandbags, and get your 5,000 rewards points. Ada County Commissioner Rick Visser with us this morning. There was a little election on the 14th that turned out pretty well for Ada County Schools.
Yes, it did, David. All four of the bonds and levies passed. Boise City had a big one because they needed some new facilities. A $172.5 million bond went through, which is payable over 20 years. Well, the West Ada School District put forth a $160 million levy over 10 years. CUNA put forth both a bond and a levy, and they both came through. What's important, though, what caught my mind and what's on my mind already, David, is that your intro to this, you said a little election, and in more ways it turned out to be a little election. The turnout was pathetic, to put it best. Granted, Boise had a decent turnout, 24%, but West Ada, which is West Boise, Meridian, Star going out that way, 12%. And it's these off-season elections, I think, that do that. In November, we had a presidential election, and that's when I ran. We had a turnout of 88%, and over 200,000 voters turned out. I was told by our clerk's office that I received the highest number of votes ever in a contested countywide race, which was just under 99,000 votes. So that's a lot of thank you cards to send out.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness for e-cards. But
it sounds like you're the one person who can actually say you have a mandate.
Yeah. That's right. I do have a mandate. So, yeah, I'm in favor of putting those elections when the general elections are, you know, May and November. Even in off years, people are used to voting in a primary in May and a general in November. And 12% it's not right. So that's my position on those.
Let's talk about the property tax reduction program. Now, I guess qualified property owners can save quite a bit of money.
Yes, sir, they can, Chris. They can save up to $1,320. The key word here, though, again, is qualified. For starters, they have to have a net income of less than $29,640. Now, why can't they make it an even $29,000? You know, that sounds like something, again, with our tax code stuff. But that's where it's at. And then there's the second factor that people have to qualify that have alternative things. The main one on there is to be 65 years or older.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a great program that we have going. It's a state program, and the state does reimburse the counties. But we've got a lot of senior citizens, a lot of baby boomers that are in that category.
Now, if you want to take advantage of this, you do have to apply.
Yes, sir, you do. You can do that online either through the State of Idaho's Tax Commission's website, which is tax.idaho.gov, or you can go to the county website or the county clerk's website and do the same thing, and they'll take care of you there. The form is pretty straightforward, but the deadline is approaching, April 18th. So time is of the essence.
The county coroner receives national accreditation. That's a big deal.
That is a very big deal. Actually, it was a second accreditation that our coroner's office received, and we are only the second coroner's office in the entire country to have that. So 2 + 2 equals outstanding. That's what we've done there. You know, the coroner's office is behind the scenes. You don't hear much about them. But
with luck, yeah.
Yes. Well, and if you're there, then you're not going to hear about them, and then luck may go the other way for you. But we are serving 33 other counties, and we've got 44 in the state. Mm-hmm. There's a few in northern Idaho that we don't serve, and also in southeastern Idaho. But we serve 44 other counties at an actually below competitive rate. We're going to increase the rate for charging other counties shortly, and it'll get us up into the neighborhood of Salt Lake City, Utah regions.
And finally, Paramedics ABC Award. I always like to point out when people get awards, especially for such a great service as this.
Yeah, thank you very much, David. One of our paramedics, Bart Buckendorf, received an award at a regional conference dealing with promoting or marketing or getting the word out on SIDS. And now there's another syndrome that's called SUID, S-U-I-D, which stands for Sudden Unexpected Infant Death. And Bart came up with a showing the public thing of putting it on a mobile sign that we have been using and going through traffic, which is not a four-letter word, but traffic in Ada County is becoming a dreaded word. Mm. So definitely congratulations to Bart. And remember, with SIDS and SUDS, ABC, that's that infants should sleep alone, on their back, and in a crib. Protect your young infant.
Yeah.
You don't want to go through this tragedy and the heartbreak that comes along with it.
Fantastic. Ada County Commissioner Rick Visser, thanks for joining this morning. I hope it was painless for you.
It was painless. I enjoyed the laughs. I mean, the people missed out during the commercial breaks. But thank you very much, Chris and David.
Great. Thanks for coming in this morning. 9:26. We've got news with Rick Worthington next on 670 KBOI.
Remember, you are listening to Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
9:37. Welcome back to the show. You got 23 minutes. Time for the March KBO. Oh, no, wait. Hold on a second. That's not what I wanted. Stand by. Don't do anything. Here we go. You got 23 minutes. Brackets for the men's basketball tournament. Ready to go. Mm-hmm. Go to KBOI.com now and enter the Million Dollar Madness Challenge. Play against the talk hosts.
Go quickly.
That's you.
Yeah.
It's me.
Mm-hmm.
It's Nate.
That's right.
A perfect bracket gives you a chance at $1 million. But even if you aren't perfect... And really, who is?
Yeah. And by the way, we're accepted from that because we don't get to win $1 million.
I don't get to
even
win anything.
If we have a perfect bracket.
You do. If you have the best local bracket here in the Treasure Valley, you'll have a chance to win a 55-inch 4K TV from the Stereo Shop.
See, now that's cool.
That's not a bad consolation prize, is it? $1 million would be great.
Yeah.
But you don't have to be perfect to win the TV. You just got to be good.
Yeah.
$1 million
well,
Madness.
Just, you know, better than everyone else.
Yeah. Brought to you exclusively by Peterson Auto Group, the Stereo Shop, and, of course, 670 KBO.
Could happen.
Could happen.
There are always upsets.
And like I say, as long as I'm not eligible, you don't have to worry about it because I'm awesome.
And who do you have as your national champion?
UCLA.
Well, that could happen. Possibly.
I think I was telling you this yesterday. In my mind, and this is my mind.
You're going to Carolina?
All the number ones have a chance to win.
Yeah, that's true.
All the number twos have a chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think out of the number threes, I only really like UCLA. So to me, one of those nine teams is going to win.
You know, and you look at different years, and there are years when all four of the number one seeds made it to the Final Four, and there are years when just number ones and twos and threes make it. Then you'll see a year, and the four seeds that end up making it are like a 5-8, an 11, and a 12. And you think, well, what happened there?
Yep.
Well, that's what can happen in the tournament. It's
beauty of 18 and 19-year-old kids playing basketball.
Well, and exactly. And in the next 4 days, today being the first of those 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, there are a total of 48 games.
And there will be an upset in there, everybody.
Yes, some of them may go haywire.
If you went chalk, you could be in trouble come Monday. President Trump's proposed budget takes a cleaver to domestic programs. I'm reading this from USA Today.
All right.
With many agencies taking percentage spending cuts in the double digits. But for dozens of smaller agencies and programs, the cut is 100%. Let me give you some of the proposed cuts here. Department of Agriculture, Water and Wastewater Loan and Grant Program. Rural communities can be served by private sector financing or other federal investments in rural water infrastructure, such as the Environmental Protection Agency's state revolving funds, the budget says.
Now, this isn't one of those things where we're going to really slice the federal budget and then cost states enough money that they'll all go bankrupt.
Let's hold off on that till it happens.
Okay, just, you know, wanted to skip ahead.
The McGovern-Dole International Food for Education Program, $202 million. Trump's budget says the program, a sort of third world school lunch project, lacks evidence that it is being used effectively, implemented to reduce food insecurity.
Well, now, does this mean that the kids at the poorer schools in this area will
might
no
not
longer
be getting free lunch?
Will no longer get breakfast and lunch for
yep.
free.
Hmm. From the Department of Commerce, Economic Development Administration, $221 million. Obama's 2017 budget touted the agency as the only federal government agency with a mission and program focused exclusively on economic development. The Trump budget says it has limited measurable impact and duplicates other federal programs.
Yeah.
Get it out.
Okay, I have a hard time arguing with that at all, that it duplicates other programs, because there are lots of programs that simply duplicate other programs.
Yes, what government is.
In the same way as every year something comes up in the legislature and something comes up in Congress that is simply a bill telling you to pay attention to a different law that's already been passed.
Yes. Also from the Department of Commerce, Minority Business Development Agency, $32 million. The White House says this Minority Business Incubator Program is duplicative of other programs in the Small Business Administration.
Copycat.
And so here's the thing. And so somebody might look at that and go, I can't believe you're getting rid of it completely. But if it's already seriously covered by another part of the government, why would there be?
Then you're not getting
rid of it. You don't need it.
Completely.
Yeah.
You're not getting rid of what it accomplishes.
Yes.
You're getting rid of the duplication.
The wasted department.
Yeah, wasted department.
There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's 7 things in the Department of Education. If you think I'm reading them all, you're crazy.
It's interesting. When the president was campaigning, you know, and he said he wanted to drain the swamp, basically. And I think a lot of people just thought that that meant replace a lot of the people who have been in Washington for a long time that are,
yes.
you know, maybe causing the log jam, and replace them with new people. But there are some people that are simply being gotten rid of and then not replaced at all,
yes.
as a way to save the federal budget.
So here are the 7 things from the Department of Education. Supporting Effective Instruction States Grant Program, 21st Century Community Learning Centers Program, Federal Supplemental Education Opportunity Grant Program, Striving Readers Comprehensive Literacy Program. I had to read that correctly so that, you know,
right.
the irony wouldn't be lost on anyone.
You never want to mispronounce or misspell literacy.
Teacher Quality Partnership, Impact Aid Support Payments for Federal Property, and International Education Program.
Okay.
The Department of Energy has 5 things they're cutting.
Very quickly, I was going to say, to be perfectly fair to the president, all of those things you just mentioned, not a one of them is actually in the Constitution.
No, exactly.
As a responsibility of the federal
yes.
government. Now, most of them have come around because somebody saw a problem and wanted to fix it in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they decided it was the federal government's problem. And sometimes they decided, well, it's your problem, not ours.
Department of Energy, Advanced Research Projects Agency Energy.
Mm-hmm.
Title 17, Innovative Technology Loan Guarantee Program. Advanced Technology Vehicle Manufacturing Program. Weatherization Assistance Program. He's not a big believer in climate change, so you knew that would get locked off.
Exactly.
And the State Energy Program, $28 million there. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Professions and Nurse Training Program. Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program. And the Community Services Block Grants.
Mm-hmm.
Department of Housing and Urban Development.
You know, the more you make this list, I'm sure some of those, a lot of people think some of those are completely necessary, but they start to fall into a pattern of things that seem like they were just added on at some point to appease someone.
Yes.
And the president is saying, okay, you've been appeased long enough. Now stop this because it's not profitable.
Yeah. Department of Housing and Urban Development, Community Development Block Grant Program.
Mm-hmm.
Section 4 Capacity Building for Community Development and Affordable Housing Program. $35 million.
Anything with a title that long, probably we don't need anyway.
This affordable housing program supports organizations like the Local Initiative Support Corporation, which the White House says should be privately funded. So, I mean,
all right then.
Department of the Interior, abandoned mine there, land grants.
There again, he's not saying get rid of it. He's saying privately funded.
Yeah, yeah, get your own money.
Yeah, stop making the taxpayers pay for it and just have somebody else work it as a business.
National Heritage Areas, mm-hmm. National Wildlife Refuge Fund maintains the Fish and Wildlife Service's 563 wildlife refuge throughout mm-hmm. the country. Department of Justice, State Criminal Alien Assistance Program, $210 million. Department of Labor, Senior Community Service Employment Program, $434 million. Occupational Safety and Health Administration, Training Grants, $11 million. Department of State and U.S. Agency for International Development, the Department of Transportation, Department of Treasury, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, National Aeronautics and Space Administration, independent agencies and commissions. There's 30 of those that are all getting chopped.
Anything that makes it less convenient to do business on a large scale seems to be going away. And I guess the hope is that we won't discover that any of those things resulted in some sort of cataclysmic event.
Well, and the thing with...
But I'm pretty sure they won't.
Yeah. And, of course, then it directs $2.6 billion to the border wall. So... That's chopping all that to send it to that.
You know, which I'm guessing will be talked about for at least the next couple of years before anything happens.
Oh, I would think so, yeah. I'm okay with smaller government. As long as something catastrophic, as you said, doesn't happen, I'm okay with smaller government. There's nothing wrong with less government or making it harder for people to get certain things
from
duplicated...
Exactly. And there are always going to be people who say, no matter what you cut, oh, that was absolutely necessary. Oh, you're cruel.
Yes.
Oh, you're this. Oh, you're that. But there were a lot of these things that we did spend a lot of time getting along without before.
Yeah. And like you say, a lot of times, it's obviously an exaggeration. I don't mean it. But a lot of times it's because one person needed it.
If you're running a household, quite often you say, great idea, but we can't afford it.
Yeah. Love a new TV.
And it would be nice if once in a while the federal government said that, too.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to hold?
Well, you just tell the next election, probably.
Yeah. 947, 670 KBOI. 950 now at 670 KBOI. More President Trump. Trump travel ban dealt another blow by a Maryland judge this morning. This was after the
Hawaii judge
yesterday.
Yeah.
President Trump's temporary travel ban targeting six majority Muslim countries.
Which, by the way, used to be seven.
Yeah, was dealt in. I don't know that I like the wording, but that's all right. I mean, I understand that's factually true that they're majority Muslim,
mm-hmm.
but it's not.
Well, generally, okay,
in my mind, it's not a Muslim ban; it's a terrorism ban.
But you know journalism.
Yeah, I know.
You can usually tell in the first paragraph.
Yes.
What the writer's attitude toward the whole thing is.
Yep. Anyway, let me just read it. Let me not judge. Let me just read.
Okay.
I'll try to. President Trump's temporary travel ban targeting six majority Muslim countries was dealt another blow Thursday after a federal judge in Maryland suspended a portion of the ban that prevented visas being issued to nationals of the six countries. The Maryland decision follows a ruling by a federal judge in Hawaii yesterday, although it is narrower in scope. In the Hawaii ruling, U.S. District Judge Derek Watson issued a nationwide halt to the ban. They would have barred new visas and prevented the admission of new refugees. It was a stinging rebuke of Trump's second attempt to institute the controversial order just hours before it was to take effect.
Hmm.
The executive order signed by Trump on March 6th banned citizens of Iran, Libya, Somalia, the Sudan, Syria, and Yemen for 90 days. See, if it doesn't ban them forever, it doesn't ban them. It just delays them for 90 days and all refugees for 120 days. It includes several changes from the original ban struck down in the court. The new order would have removed Iraq from the list. Do we
need to do any of that?
Well, of course we need to do that.
Okay.
But I guess he's not saying people from those countries can't come here ever.
Right.
He's saying, can we just make sure that the people who are coming here for the right reasons? Yeah. Isn't that enough for everybody?
Most of the opposition says what you're doing then is lining people up and saying, okay, are you a terrorist? No. Are you a terrorist? No. Are you a terrorist? No. And they don't like that. But I think what the president's trying to tell you is it's gotten down to the point where they really can't think of anything else to do.
You can't just
know who is and who isn't susceptible to this sort of thing.
And while you're right that I'm sure they don't like it, you know what we shouldn't like in this country? Things blowing up and people dying. And again, I know they don't do that now.
Exactly.
But we see what happened in France, where they had three terror attacks in 18 months, killing over 200 people.
And in France, much as in the Netherlands and Germany, places like that, they are considerably more nationalist than we are here.
Yes.
And it's generally because they're older nations to begin with, and also they never had a policy of we'll accept anybody.
Yes.
Like the United States did for most of its existence.
For most of it, yeah.
Quickly here, the disgruntled vet wrote in to say Hawaii has taken in a total of 127 refugees since 2002, and not a single one from a Muslim nation. This is NIMBY activism, and NIMBY means not in my backyard. So in other words, they say, well, we don't want this to happen, but hey, as a matter of fact, we don't really accept that many people anyway. And yet Hawaii's big problem with this whole thing is they don't want to prevent anybody in any country from visiting Hawaii and spending money.
Sure, that makes perfect sense for Hawaii.
That's exactly how they make their money, is tourism.
There are things in the first, 60 days,
mm-hmm.
that I probably disagreed with President Trump on.
It's going to be any president, though, isn't it?
And that's going to be any president. You're exactly right. Him standing up for Americans and wanting to do what's best for America, the hell with everybody else, I'm pretty much okay with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big believer in that. I want to help the other countries that need it.
To a certain extent, most people are, with the exception of a lot of people whose sole function is to do business overseas. And there are a lot of companies that do that. And some of those companies are saying, okay, this is great, depending on which countries you do it to, but don't touch the following areas because we work there.
Sure. And I get that. But at the end of the day, what's the federal government's main job?
Defense?
Yes.
Okay.
At the end of the day, that's what it's there for, to keep all of us safe.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can't, through a delay of 90 days or 120 days, try to get our brains wrapped around the refugee program and immigrants coming mm-hmm. into this country, when will we ever get our heads around it?
The only problem I would have with that is I doubt that's long enough to get all those things straightened out. But then again, what is the amount of time it'll take?
50 years,
maybe.
Probably. But at least it's a start.
Yeah.
At least it's a start to try to wrap your brain around it and say, okay, where are people coming from and how are they coming here and why? Let's make sure everybody's here for all the great reasons that this country provides.
Right.
I'm okay with that. We are a country of immigrants.
And again, we do have a lot of rules that all we need to do
is enforce those rules.
Exactly.
I'm 100% with you, Chris. Thanks. Have a good rest of your day.
You too.
Go UCLA. Rush Limbaugh comes up after the news on 670 KBOI.
Or 2352. Again, 1-800-544-23.
We are 670 KBOI Boise.
A Cumulus station.
It's 10 o'clock. KBOI News starts.